Hello and welcome to Condensed History Gems with me, Greg Chapman.
And me, Jem Deducci.
And Jem, it's Quasimodo time. That's right, the bells, because Jem, it is time. These do tend to be our most popular episodes. These are the ones I get the most comments on and everything else. Now, last time we had an argument, I believe I won on a technical knockout.
Yes.
You know, it was fairly good going for me, a technical I will take. But today we're going to have a bit of an argument about inventors and genius inventors. Who was the greatest genius inventor of all time? So,
well, are we talking inventors, scientists, things like that?
Any sort of genius within that sort of realm, yeah.
Yeah, because we are offline, we actually had this conversation, because the term genius is used in lots of different areas. So, you know, trying to compare, let's say, the genius of Jimi Hendrix versus the genius of Charles Darwin, well, where do you begin with something like that? You know, Darwin was terrible at guitar and Jimi Hendrix didn't understand biological evolution. I don't know. So we're specifically talking about in the same area. These are sort of scientific inventory. These are people who understand mathematics and science and stuff like that. And we'll see what we, you know, try and compare and see what we've got. So, Greg, over to you. Who are you going to go for?
Yeah, so as always, neither of us at this point in time has told the other one which person we've chosen, who we're going to be championing today. As you know, this has happened, I think, only once before, I think, where we've both actually chosen the same person. Jem usually these days comes along with a backup just in case that happens. Have you got a backup today, Jem?
Do you know what? I'm so convinced by my one being a good choice. I'll try and find somebody else. I'm hoping you haven't picked this person, but at the moment I've really only got one main one in the bag. So please tell me yours, Greg.
Okay, I have got for you a real genuine hero, because that's his name. I'm going to bring to the table Hero of Alexandria.
Ooh, okay, all right. I'm going for Sir Isaac Newton.
Ooh, you've gone very sort of well-known, very modern. I like that. Well, so Isaac Newton, let's be fair, most famous for not having an apple drop on his head, because that's not real. Is that right?
Yes, that is real, yes.
Also for the now discredited theory of gravity.
Sorry, when I said that, that's real, but it is a falsehood about the whole Apple thing, just to be clear on that one, because I said, yes, it's real. Anyway, yeah, Hero of Alexandria, much less well-known and obviously a lot further back in history. I know bits and bobs, but I'm sure you're about to tell us a very compelling story.
Okay, well, Hero of Alexandria, we are going back between about the year 10 AD and about the year 70 AD. He came up with all sorts of fantastic inventions. I'm going to drop a couple of them in, but he is one of those, and I'm going to give the game away. If anyone sees me at one of my shows, one of the performances I often do at steampunk events is my history of the steam train. And I take a steam train and I break it down into three parts. I say, to make a steam train, you need a steam engine, you need a steam powered vehicle, and you need a set of tracks. And basically the only reason for me dividing it into three things is because it gives me an excuse at the end to juggle three knives blindfold. But the question I always ask people is, who first invented the steam engine? And you get this wonderful range of responses. You get Watt, Trevithick, Newcomen, Stevenson, and all of these people were involved in some way of design of what we would refer to as either the modern steam engine or the modern steam train, modern steam vehicles. But the first known steam engine, that is the first steam-powered device, is actually known as the Hero engine. He invented a steam engine way back sometime around 70 AD. And the way that this steam engine works, very, very basically, is if you picture a large metal ball on a spindle so it can turn sideways, you half fill that ball with water, and out of opposite sides of the ball are little pipes at a 90 degree angle. So basically what happens is, if you light a fire underneath that ball, the water inside heats up, turns to steam, pressure increases. Think of a pressure cooker, something like that. Think of when you release the pressure cooker, all that steam comes out. Same thing happens. The steam blows out of those two tubes And that makes the Hero engine spin round and 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 round. This is a steam engine 2 millennia before the Industrial Revolution. Now, the issue he had with that first steam engine was that he wasn't really allowed to use it for anything. It was an amusement. It was an entertainment. It was something special. It was an amusement entertainment. They didn't want it to be started used to power things, because that would take jobs away from people and all sorts of other governmental restrictions on his work. But he did invent a steam engine. And this idea of using heat up water, using the sprays, I mean, the way it's spraying out those tubes is the same way a rocket works these days. And the basic idea of that, the different concept, but the basic concept he'd come up with there is even something that's used in most nuclear power plants today, that basic concept of using something to heat water to make steam to pressure and drive engines. So I think that, so far ahead of his time, gives him real credence to be one of the greatest geniuses of all times. And I have other inventions that I'm going to bring up as well, but that's kind of the main one I'm going to kick off with.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically a form of turbine. I take your point on that, and that's it is a good one. And you know, I did know about the steam engine or steam ball, and it really does surprise people that it's that old, as it were. So my argument about Newton, everybody of course knows about Sir Isaac Newton, is the fact that when you are trying to compare apples with apples, it's like, what's more important, the theory of gravity or the theory of evolution or something like that? So my point is that Newton, yes, of course, he is best known for his theory of gravity. He didn't invent gravity. Things still were stuck to the ground before Newton's time. But he basically invented three really important things. He invented the theory of gravity, which, yes, on a sort of a micro scale, it doesn't apply to subatomic world and the quantum world. But basically, it's Newton's calculations that got man on the moon, for example. It's the slingshot and using the gravity boost from satellites and spinning them off into all kinds of and unmanned vehicles across our solar system, all thanks to Newton. But he did two other things as well. He also did a lot of work with light and prisms. And whereas, yes, the telescope had been invented before Newton, what he did, though, is turn it into the modern telescope. It became far better with him because he understood about lensing and about refraction of light. And so that was another way to do exploration. Without Newton, you wouldn't have a modern day telescope, a visual telescope, of course. And also the same sort of lensing would apply to microscopes, too. And the third thing, now there is debate about this because there was a German who seems to have invented it at basically the same time, but the two of them did it independently of each other. But he invented calculus, which is in essence creating almost like a mathematical process to break down other mathematical equations. It's incredibly important in terms of complex mathematics and indeed helping you on things like proofs in science. So you're talking about three things where any one of those things would put you up there as an absolute genius. But the thing about Newton is, a lot of people, the hero, he's so far back, we don't know much about the man. We know about his achievements. But when you look at most of these great, in inverted comma, people in history, an awful lot of them were horrible, terrible human beings, and Newton was evil and awful. And actually, he wasted about 20 years of his life studying alchemy and trying to create gold out of base metals. And also, he became the head of the coinage. And he was particularly obsessed with one forger who he managed to, using his genius intellect, he managed to hunt the forger down. And while it was a law, it was a law that hadn't been enforced for years, but he had that forger executed. So this, you know, Newton was a mean, nasty little man with a great big throbbing brain who, without him, the world would absolutely be a poorer place. And all his stuff was immediately used. All of his stuff had an application immediately, whereas Hero was way, way ahead of his time. But, of course, none of it was actually used. It was forgotten. Basically, the steam engine was reinvented centuries later.
I think that's fair to say about the steam engine. But don't you bring in none of Hero's stuff was actually used. I would like to bring to the table, in defence of Hero's stuff actually being used, the vending machine. Have you ever used a vending machine?
Oh, do you know what? I've heard this. I'm dying to hear how much of a vending machine it was, so please, over to you.
Oh, it was genuinely a vending machine. As I understand it, mainly used, actually, for holy water. It was a holy water vending machine. Really, really, actually quite a simple mechanism. It did work with a machine with a slot for a coin to go in. It is quite definitely a vending machine. And basically, you'd go to the temple or wherever it was, and you'd get your holy water. And before him, you'd have to have a priest spending all day pouring out little glass of holy water and taking your money. Well, obviously, there are better things for a priest to do. Don't ask me what, but there are obviously better things for a priest to do. And so he invented this vending machine. And the idea of it is really simple, and I'm aware that as I'm explaining this, I'm going to be using my arms to gesture and demonstrate. And I know you can't see that, but you'll have to work with me. So basically, the coin goes in a slot on the top of the machine. You drop your coin in, your coin will drop down, and it will land on a little pan which has a lever attached. That pushes that down, opens up a valve, and water starts to flow out. As it does, that coin will slide off the pan into a collection tin for the coins. As soon as that coin slips off the pan, the lever flips back up, closes the valve, and you stop getting water. And it was timed so that that would drop down, that coin would slide down. I mean, obviously, he hadn't figured out the theory of gravity, but he could figure out, oh, hold on, this is how long it takes gravity to pull a coin down, even though he didn't know what the name was. He didn't need Newton for that. But it was genuinely a vending machine.
Well, you see, now I'm going to challenge it, because as soon as you say vending machine, and this is where I had a problem with it, because thank you for explaining that. That's actually a really good explanation, which I haven't heard before. But you just see it in casually, and he even invented a vending machine. For that, you imagine there are different selections of different things, and you somehow get the thing. Now, liquid is obviously easier, but you know what he invented was a tap that worked when you put a weight on it, weight of a coin. That's really what it boils down to. Whereas that's, you know, in the sheer letter of the law, that is a machine that vends, but that is not what we consider today a vending machine. And again, just like you were careful with your words. You did say, don't tell me there was nothing he used that wasn't used immediately. True, that was used immediately, but like the steam engine, it was forgotten. And centuries later, people reinvented the vending machine, only now it involved packets of things and spiraled screws and things like that. So I think it's in the same territory. It's almost like this guy was sitting there. You know, there's a great Mitchell and Webb comedy sketch where basically there's this inventor and he goes, look, behold, I have invented something. What is it? And he produces a wooden computer mouse. And he goes, it has a ball in it. And they go, so what's that for? He goes, it's for this amazing machine that I haven't quite, it's on the tip of my brain. I don't quite understand. He goes, but it is wireless. What does that mean? It has no wires coming out of it. Is that a good thing? I get the feeling in the future that will be a good thing, yes. And it's all like, I get Hero is a little bit like that. He goes, yeah, I can imagine entire meals would be able to be created through my vending machine. It's like, really? At the moment, it's just a tap, mate. And he goes, whole engines moving faster than horses will be pulled by my steam ball of whizziness. And it's like, I can't see that, mate. And it's like, yes. It's a bit like when we were talking about flight. You can draw a dotted line from him to later inventions, but actually other people who had completely forgotten about him reinvented it at a later date. So absolutely smart guy. Wonderful guy I'd love to sit down and have a chat with and see what's in his brain and thinking how much of that is in our modern world. But his impact on the world of science was minimal. You know, he is not remembered in the same breath as someone like Archimedes, for example, Euler's, mathematics. And, you know, there are ancient people where their inventions and concepts absolutely did ripple throughout history and science. He is more of a novelty act.
Well, he's not a novelty act because he actually came up with so much stuff. And, I mean, he formulated the first principle of the shortest path of light. Now, that isn't something that was forgotten about. That was a principle that he came up with, was then expanded upon, and then eventually expanded upon again and restated by Fermat, one of the, you know, sort of far more recently in 1600s. Now, also, we're discussing genius, and for me, Newton was clever, but he kind of stayed within this sort of scientific mathematical sphere, as it were. Whereas Hero was really expanding. He was, you know, I mean, we both, I noticed, avoided one of the obvious answers, which was Leonardo da Vinci. You know, if you say to, you know, sort of most people on the street, biggest genius in history, a lot of people will go da Vinci. Same argument you just made there. An awful lot of the stuff he made, you know, sort of didn't actually lead to anything, didn't push on. And the thing about da Vinci is he was working with other people's ideas. Same thing with Newton. He was standing on the shoulders of so much that had already gone before. But
I'm going to just challenge that. He absolutely did say standing on the shoulders of giants. That is a Newton quote. He meant it sarcastically. He goes, yeah, basically people think I'm standing on the shoulder of giants. He goes, well, those giants are morons because I'm the real genius and none of them can keep up with my amazing concepts. Like I said, he was a very thin-skinned, nasty guy. He was absolutely a genius. So I can tell you right now, he would absolutely debate that point.
He can debate that point all he wants, but he was writing in a period of time where we'd already got into the Renaissance by then. People had, by that point in time, started to move towards a more scientific viewpoint of the world. These things had happened. You know, he was not starting from base principles. Compare that, for example, with someone who is credited with first use of steam power, first use of a wind-powered machine. The first instance of wind powering a machine we have in history is Hero's wind-powered organ, which works again on sort of a water wheel.
Windmills existed before that.
A wind-powered machine. No. First wind-powered machine is Hero of Alexandria.
Well, windmills existed before that. And if a mill isn't a machine, I don't know what is. I mean, it might be the first wind-powered mechanical musical instrument or something, like the first heavier-than-air flight by a human on a machine, or, you know. You're stretching it there. You're pushing it there. I mean, that sounds amazing. Don't get me wrong. And if you said, all right, Jim, you think it's so easy, you invent a wind-powered organ, the answer is I wouldn't know where to begin. But that wasn't the first. Windmills were definitely in existence before Hero of Alexandria.
You really think that's true, do you? I mean,
yes.
I'll give you the earliest known wind-powered grain mills and water pumps were used by the Persians in 500 AD.
You reckon?
That's what I reckon. Okay. Go on. You find me an earlier windmill. I am looking on Third Planet Wind Power.
That website.
A wind power company.
I prefer second powered wind.
They definitely say the earliest wind and water pumps used in Persia in 500. If you can find me, I mean, let's go to that that huge basis of knowledge. Let's see what Wikipedia has to say. Oh, Wikipedia, oddly enough, puts Hero of Alexandria as the first wind-powered machine. I'm going to argue with you. I'm going to say, no, he definitely was first wind-powered machine.
Oh, all right, fine. I stand corrected. I think that's a real problem online when people are caught out. And I don't know if you listened to the Fast Five. I mean, come on, it's our website. I hope you did. When I did the Fast Five about, is it okay to get things wrong? And, you know, we do make mistakes. Are you with me on this?
Yeah, I'm with you on this, yeah.
Yeah, and therefore, and I think that there's almost the shame of, like, if it turns out what you said's untrue online, what tends to happen is, well, I'm just going to shout louder or I'm going to attack you harder. And actually, sometimes you need to just put your hand up and go, got it wrong. And it's like, fine. I would have thought that actually windmills would have perhaps been, I mean, ancient Persia, ancient Egypt. I wouldn't have surprised me if something existed in 500 BC. But you're saying the earliest evidence we've got anywhere is 500 AD? Okay, fine.
And you know what?
Fine. So
that is exactly why I looked it up, because I would not have been surprised to hear that I was wrong in the fact that I wrote down saying he was the first wind power. And because we're doing a history podcast, not only is it important sort of personally that if we're going to have this argument that we can back down, and, you know, if I'd found one that had said ancient Egypt, I would have had to go, oops, okay, I've made a mistake. But also for the podcast, it's important that if we're disagreeing about a fact, we try and find out. And again, if anyone can find an earlier windmill than 500 AD, please let us know, because I'd actually be really interested to find out, you know, if there was somewhere else in the world, some place that had developed wind power. But actually, what you've reminded me of, completely off topic, because we are now, was I was listening, and I'm going to mention John Finnemore 2 weeks in a row, actually, because I was listening to the latest series of his Souvenir programme, really funny radio comedy show. And one of the sketches in there was about this new invention coming out, which was the auto-referencer. And so, you know, you started off with the advert, and the advert's like, you know, when you're in a pub and somebody says, like, you know, somebody says something you know is wrong, and you just can't think of something to back it up. You can't think of the proof. And so you have this little device that sits in your pocket, and, you say, it was, no, I'm sure Hero had the earliest wind-powered machine. And then this little device comes up and goes, you are quite correct. You read this on this particular place, and the next wind-powered machine was 400 AD. And it kind of had this advert building up. And then the sketch goes on to a week after the machines had gone on sale, when the company that built them has just collapsed and gone bankrupt, because it turns out what people didn't really want was a machine sitting there going, no, you've misremembered this fact. The other person is actually correct. Your reference is your brother once told you something after he'd been drinking.
Okay. But I go back to my previous point about you yourself. Okay, you know, last time when it came to something like the Crimean War, you know, last time you and you cleverly sort of boxed me into a corner. But I think you've just, on this occasion, you just shot yourself into the foot. I keep saying, and none of his stuff caught on. It was too far ahead of its time. And you're going, no, there's this, no, there's that. But again, he invented this wind-powered organ. Hardly the first thing you'd want to invent using wind power. A mill would be more useful than an organ, no matter how cool the organ is, okay? But then it was forgotten. You know, he's in Alexandria, which is modern-day Egypt, and he was doing this in, like, 70 AD, and it was forgotten about for three centuries. And the next time wind power pops up as a way to power something, it's in a different continent, so by a different culture. So that implies that everyone sat there and went, yeah, Hero, that's a really fun organ. Now let's get on with our day jobs. He just didn't have the same lasting power that Newton did.
But the thing is, we're not talking about the achievement, we're talking about the genius. And my point is that he, you know, you've brought into the argument his whole thing about long-standing results of his work. Now, if we'd said who built the best wall, then I'd be perfectly willing to accept that the wall that stood the longest was the winner. But when we're talking about genius, I mean, it's not necessarily the length of time something lasts that makes something the most genius. Hero came up with all of these inventions. What he wasn't, obviously, was a genius in marketing and promotion and things. That may have been the one area that he was missing. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm just going to go through. He also invented mechanisms for the theatre. He actually invented an entirely mechanical 10-minute play.
Didn't he invent the trapdoor or something?
I believe he did, yeah. Yeah, I mean, come on, now that is still in use today. Trapdoor, definitely still in use today. And actually, if you watch a little program called Room 101, where they have the little, he pulls a lever and they drop things into the trapdoor, okay? Drop down a trapdoor. Now, when that trapdoor works and you open up a trapdoor and something falls inside it, that's using gravity. So when you keep telling me Newton came up with gravity and he figured out how it all worked, people were using gravity. People understood gravity. People understood things falling down a long time before Newton put a name to it.
I didn't say that. I said, you know, like I said earlier, you know, people say, oh, he invented gravity. No, he didn't. You know, but he was the first person to, you know, if you want to compare, you sometimes get people saying, well, what's the greatest scientist from Britain? And you quite often get the argument about, is it Newton versus Charles Darwin? And it's like, look, Charles Darwin was a genius, but he created one amazing concept. You know, Newton created three. And the other thing about the genius of Darwin is at no point do you need to use maths. You know, it can be very simply explained in maybe a paragraph of written words, which anybody could understand. Whereas when you get to Newton, in a way, he was one of those sort of founding fathers like Einstein, in the sense that you needed to understand the mathematics. Suddenly he's using a different language. And indeed, in his book, Principia Mathematicus, he deliberately wrote it in Latin because he didn't want the riffraff reading it, basically. Again, showing you he's not a nice human being. You know, that's fairly genius. You know, writing an entire book not in your own language to prove a point, explaining something that, you know, look, everybody knew things fell, but some people thought that different things fell, you know, different weighted things would fall at different speeds, and they don't, and he was the first person to explain that. And, you know, it's a case of, yeah, you know, I go back to it that, well, you're saying that genius isn't necessarily about longevity. That may be true, but one of the ways to assess the impact of genius, how genius is this idea? Well, let's look at how it changed society afterwards. Well, I can show that clearly with Newton, and you can't show that clearly with Hero. So therefore, you're therefore dismissing that as one of the potential measurements of genius.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, I've got 3 points that I'm going to kind of bring in to finish up for the podcast from my side. Point number one is, you mentioned there that, you know, we got Darwin versus Newton. Darwin did one thing, Newton did three things. I mean, I've just given you four or five examples of Hero, and I've still got a whole list of things that he could do. Okay, so, I mean, Hero's winning there. Second thing, you mentioned that Newton wrote his book in Latin. I mean, everyone speaks Latin. Now, Hero of Alexandria, he wrote his book in ancient Greek. I mean, come on. Now, that's using the old noggin. He wrote in ancient Greek. But actually, my far less facetious point that I want to make is actually quite an interesting one about the two people we've chosen. Because we could have chosen pretty much, you know, anyone we wanted from all the spheres of science and everything else.
Edison, Tesla, Einstein, blah, blah, blah.
All of these people, we could have gone for electronics. But what I find really interesting is, leaving aside for the moment the Hero engine and a couple of his others, when I look down the list of inventions that Hero actually created, we have he had what was essentially almost an automatic door, which used water collection. When the water collected enough, it got heavy enough, pulled down the rope and opened up the doors of a temple. As I've mentioned, we got the vending machine. Coin falls down, lands on a thing, weight of the coin pulls it down, coin falls off. A lot of his stuff with the Greek theatre, a lot of rope systems and things, all worked from different weights and balances.
I am spotting a theme here. Most of this is to do with sort of levers and weights and counterweights.
Levers, weights and counterweights. And even he came up with a programmable car. And what I find really interesting is, out of all the things, you know, that we both could have picked, all the different, you know, we could have, like you said, we could have gone for Darwin, we could have gone for electronics, we could have done, we've gone basically for two people with fairly mechanical minds, looking at the simple question of, you know, weights and things pulling down. And, you know, regardless of which one of us wins the argument, I just find it really fascinating that the issue of weights and gravity is something that crosses across between these two characters, some sort of 1700 years apart in time. And yet they're both dealing with the basic questions of, how do things pull down? What speed do things pull down? Now, one of them is looking at from a point of view of, okay, how can I take the fact that heavy things fall down and utilize it? And one of them is looking at it from the point of view of, I wonder why that heavy thing gets pulled down, and then that's being taken on and utilized by other people, that idea. But I just think it's really fascinating that last week we talked about flight, and we talked about how it took 2,000 years to get from, you know, oh, I wish people could fly, to look, we can actually fly. The fact that we've actually almost done it in reverse in this way. We've got somebody 2,000 years ago going, look, this is how I use weight. And then we've come 1,700 years later before somebody says, yeah, but hang on, why does that actually work? It's not going to win me the argument that, because it wasn't meant to. It's just I find that really interesting that we've picked two figures that kind of work together in that way.
Okay, well, I take your point there. Yeah, we could go on. This is already running a bit long. So, okay, that is the Jem and Greg point of view about these two scientists or inventors, whatever you want to call them. And now we throw it over to you guys. What do you think? Who do you think wins? Maybe it's not just about who's your favorite, but what do you think of the level of our argument and discourse throughout this? So that's us. That's us done. Shall we go into the plugs then?
Oh, so I noticed there Jem is afraid to try and draw a conclusion on the episode. He's just throwing it open to you.
It's called being nice to our audience, Greg. You might want to try it sometime.
I'm always nice to our audience. They're lovely people. But let's move on quickly to our plugs. Jem, have you got something you would like to plug at this point in time?
It's been a while since I've mentioned it specifically, but Silent Crossroads, my very first historical novel. It's about the only British soldier who fought in both world wars for both sides. The man changes sides. So if that sounds intriguing, Silent Crossroads, I ended up having to self-publish it. I noticed recently it got quite a big bump on the Amazon library. But if you go onto Amazon, you can download it for about 99p. You can actually buy it as a book. That does cost more. But look, for the sake of, the reviews have been unanimous. Everybody who's read it has said, this is really good. You know, it does teach a bit of history, but it is genuinely a drama. There's action in it, but there's a lot of family drama in it as well. And you get to start thinking about this man's moral choices throughout his life as well. If this sounds intriguing, absolutely give Silent Crossroads a go. You can only get it on Amazon, but like I say, you can get it for 99p or so, so you might want to give it a go.
And one thing I would just say on the end of that is a couple of weeks ago I did the Non-Psychic Psyche show. I talked about it on the Fast Five. One of the things I really liked when I did that show was, more than any of the other shows I've done, was people came up afterwards and they said to me, it made them think. It's made them start thinking. And I think that is the strongest strongest thing I can say to get you to go and have a read of Silent Crossroads is that book. When I read it, what I will say is don't try finishing it if you've got an early start the next morning, because when I finished Silent Crossroads, I was lying awake for a good few hours thinking about some of the stuff Jem raised in that book, some of the ideas and the way they're brought together. So my little additional plug for Silent Crossroads there is,
thank you, Greg.
It's a book that really does make you think. My personal plug, though, will be for The Last Airship, my steampunk web series. You can go and watch it on thelastairship.com. We are working towards series two of The Last Airship at the moment. And the best way for you to actually support The Last Airship second series is to do what Jem, I know, has done and go along to thelastairship.com, go to our little shop there and buy yourself one of the T-shirts, one of the mugs. There's all sorts of little goodies there. And anything I make out of those goes in towards getting the equipment together for the second series of The Last Airship. That is all from us this week. Please do remember to review this podcast. If you're on Facebook, if you're on Twitter, then just take a moment just to share to all your friends that you listen to the Condensed History Gems podcast, how much you enjoy it, and see if you can get somebody else listening as well. But for now, I do have to say a massive, massive thank you to my wonderful co-host, Mr. Jem Deluccio.
And to my wonderful co-host, Greg Chapman.
And for us, that's it this week. We'll be back on Friday with another Fast Five. But for now, goodbye and take care.